Podcast proudly presents. Storm in a Tea Break.
Hello and welcome to another Storm in a Tea Break, bolt-sized podcast sister from the Trope Stormers. I'm Chris Jeeves, and I'm ably assisted, as always, by lead paleontologist and co-host, Jim Carver. How are you doing, sir?
Hello there, Chris. I'm well. Thank you very much. And we're back for another bolt slash storm in a tea break. And it's Christmas time.
It's Christmas. I bet everyone's sick to death of that getting said.
Yeah. Well, I don't think you hear Noddy Holder so much in recent years. It's all your Leona Lewis's and your,
You've really dated yourself with that reference, mate.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, well, we started out with Slade, so, I mean...
You're still barely in the right decade.
Well, I am a paleontologist.
That is true. You brought it back nicely.
Yeah, so we're back for another Storm in a Tea Break, and as it's Christmas, we've got more on a classic, or a debated, often, Christmas film to come. But, yeah, first, we're here to talk franchise sequels and tropes within them.
Yes, indeedy. So franchise sequels are as they sound. Can you name some franchise sequels, Jim, for our dear listener?
So, I mean, one of my favourites is Terminator 2. You've got, out of the Jurassic Park sequence, you've got things like The Lost World. You've got all Fast and Furious all the way through to 84.
Yep.
Yeah, you've got, I went to see a film called Ladder 49 once, but I don't think there was another 48 of those. I think that's just what the name of the film was. It was pretty bad. Yeah, but you've got things like Lethal Weapon, John Wick, the Spider-Man movies, reboots thereof, Batman's, lots of superhero endeavors with this. So, you know, this is a big ticket item, really, the franchise sequel. It is something that happens a lot. And we're here to kind of depart why and how these sort of things come together, I guess.
Very well said, yeah. Just to sort of touch on what you said about Ladder 274 or whatever it was called, just makes me think of the film The Madness of King George, which was originally titled The Madness of King George III, but they changed the title because they were worried that American audiences would not go and see it because they figured they'd missed the first two installments.
Yeah, it's interesting, the kind of naming conventions. That's something I might think about picking apart when we come to talk about it a bit more, because sometimes some of them try to be a bit more offbeat and off kilter, don't they, and try and do your grandpappy sequel, we're not naming it in numbers, let's go a bit skew if that a sequel, I guess, is it comes from the word sequence, right, and the idea of being sequential, and you know, with the idea of previous and prequel being related in a similar way. But you know, there's got to be an original film, hasn't there, to kind of kick things off, is really, otherwise the idea of a franchise and a sequel doesn't really come to fruition. So, you know, you need some kind of lightning in a bottle first success, I would probably argue.
Indeed, yeah, you need something that you can sort of build upon or build around. If we're going to sort of take it right back to the genesis of the sequel, the first sequel, according to my research, The Fall of a Nation, was released in 1916, and it followed on from the infamous 1915 film Birth of a Nation. Have you seen either of those films?
I can't say I've really sat down and watched Birth of a Nation. I've seen clips of it in various documentaries, and you know, Toy Story it ain't.
I mean, not wanting to get mired in the quagmire that is, if I'm right in thinking that film was responsible for a lot of negative stereotypes associated with black people, as in because of the portrayal within the film.
Yeah, there's a lot of sort of KKK, you know, portrayed in a very positive light in that film, and you know, the idea of, you know, well, yeah, like you say, without picking it too much, the idea of black people being the threat, which you know, let's just say that hasn't aged well.
No, it hasn't. I think it has a very niche audience these days, but back then it was hugely popular and very successful. So to build on what you said previously about having an original film, you're right, you've got to have something that's got that lightning in a bottle formula that can be expanded upon. And I guess from a studio's perspective, if something makes a lot more money than it costs to make, then they're going to continue milking that and trying to sort of replicate that success. And especially if you have something that people fall in love with, like the Star Wars, Harry Potter, X-Men, Lord of the Rings, or, you know, if you've got Marvel with all those various different facets of the universe, then you develop these kind of big fanatical fan bases who would pretty much go and see anything that's attached to this franchise that tweaks their interest, not, you know, because they're just mindless automatons that will just watch anything, but because they're invested in it, they care. They want to see how this plays out.
Yeah, and I guess that creates like some quite interesting paradoxes in a way, because by its very nature, if you're kind of trying to repeat formulas, there's little scope for kind of originality, isn't there, in that sense? If you're dealing with the same characters, you've got to try and, I don't know, have them evolve in some way without changing what fundamentally made them work. Or, you know, you do risk sort of treating your fan base or your fanatical fan bases as kind of like cash machines who will just kind of consume, really, rather than kind of, you know, endeavor to make any sort of like tread new ground. And I think it's something that is a massive criticism of the kind of the studio system, isn't it? Because we're, you know, more than ever, it's an industry at the end of the day, and they're under great pressure at the minute.
Especially now, yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, we mentioned Star Wars, you mentioned things like, we mentioned Jurassic Park already. These are tried and tested formulas in a lot of ways, and that, you know, they do make big money off the back of it. It's interesting that, you know, that idea of, we said about the fall of the nation, you know, they did quite an interesting thing with the naming convention there, didn't they? They didn't go for like Fall of a Nation 2, Cruise Control, or whatever it was.
A Nation with a Vengeance or something like that. Maybe they hadn't, you know, as the first sequel, maybe they didn't realize that they could just get away with calling it 2 or Part 2 or, you know, II or however, you know, like Roman numerals or something, if you want to go Rocky on it. Maybe they didn't realize that was an option at that stage.
Well, now they're in the whiteboard pit. They would have had whiteboards back then. It'd be blackboards, wouldn't it? With a chalk blackboard pitch and just trying to get names together. Yeah, I don't think it would have...
Wouldn't have flown, would it?
Just dropped a 2 on the end there.
But I think you're right in terms of sort of creativity when you've got all these big studios, which, you know, let's not escape the fact they are money-making businesses. That's why they exist. They don't do this purely out of high art merit. You wonder if those studios just sort of, when they do happen upon something and it is a goer, it is a money-making venture, does that sort of squeeze out the sort of opportunities and sideline other projects that might have otherwise got made because the studio is too busy making Bond 72 or the next Marvel film or whatever it is. And I don't know, you have independent studios, but for independent studios, the risk is obviously far greater because the budgets are far smaller. So again, they're far less likely to take a risk on anything that's kind of, it all filters down is what I'm trying to sort of say in a probably very terrible, unarticulated way.
Yeah, yeah. Because I was thinking about this summer when you're looking at things like Tenet coming out, which are from quite, Christopher Nolan's quite an interesting one because he's quite an auteur director, but he's dipped his toe in, you know, the Batman series and things like that. But, you know, he creates quite original stories. And I think sort of Tenet's kind of, you know, it's been victim of the system of not having theaters open at the minute because of the pandemic. But also, it's an original idea that seems to have, by all accounts, fallen a bit flat. Yet it's had this kind of big budget behind it.
Okay.
I mean, we've trodden time travel quite a lot, and I think that's involved over the past. I'm not in a rush to go back to time travel tropes. You know, I've been self-isolating off the back of that more than anything over the past few months.
My vision's still a bit hazy. I still get spots and stuff every now and again.
Take it easy, buddy. Take it easy. If you need to.
Yeah, man. I walk into a lot of rooms and don't know why I'm in there.
There's just drops of blood out of the nostrils just every so often.
Yeah, just every so often. I just like catch one and just like, oh no, not again. Let's lighten the load a little bit, shall we? We've had a nice little intro there. Shall we play a little game?
Oh yeah, yeah.
You like games. I know you do. Right. Do you want to hazard a guess at what the highest grossing franchise of all time is?
Well, and my gut says, when you say that, I hear that question for the first time, I just think Star Wars immediately.
Okay.
Just because of, you know, there's all the stuff that comes with it, isn't it? It's like the toys, the lunchboxes,
Those lunchboxes are a serious pay dirt.
You know, the lightsabers. I had a pal who used to use one of those as a nightlight in his room at university.
What, a real lightsaber?
Yeah, he got like one of these like Force Effects lightsabers and just used to switch it on. It used to make, I don't know how you got to sleep with it because it used to hum all night.
That's what you get used to. Some people sleep with like a fan on throughout the year. Horses, of course.
you know, give me a lightsaber any day.
It's fair enough. You pinned your colours to the mast there. Okay, so am I going to lock in Star Wars as your answer?
Because of that. I mean, is he talking about sort of movie gross, or you're talking about like what's been
just worldwide gross? That's what I'm going.
Okay, Star Wars. We'll say Star Wars.
Okay, Star Wars. I mean, it's a swing and a miss, but it's a mighty swing, and you're very close to being right. Star Wars comes in at number two, and it grossed $9.3 billion. I think that's $1 billion so far, which is insane. That's probably higher than the GDP of some countries, small countries, admittedly, but still.
It's like a sort of Dr. Evilism, isn't it?
Yeah. It's an amount of money which no one can really like quantify. It's just, they're just numbers at this stage. Do you want to have another bite at the cherry, good sir? I'm going to just tell you now that the number one spot has made double the amount of money that Star Wars has, worldwide gross. As if that wasn't unfathomable enough.
Well, no, we had this, there was an argument that we had in a restaurant, I think it was last year, back when, you remember them?
I don't know, man, that's so 2019.
You know, knives and forks and...
Were we in Wimpy?
Yeah, we're in a Wimpy.
Were you treating me?
I was, mate. We were probably going to go see one of these films. Yeah, we were saying about whether Harry Potter was bigger than Star Wars, and because there were some females present, if you know what I mean. I would argue it's probably safe to say that the ladies amongst us were probably more into Harry Potter than they were Star Wars. So it kind of created this debate about which was the bigger fandom, the bigger grossing, you know, the more culturally sort of prevalent.
You call it debate, I call it tension, you know, and a tension that I had to go home with, so, you know.
Moving on from that, I think there is something that's become prevalent in the recent years, actually thinking about it, with the advent of what Marvel have done and Marvel Studios, or the MCU for shorthand. So I'm gonna revise my answer and say the MCU.
The MCU. Okay. Are you gonna continue using that acronym? It's super nerdy.
Maku? I could go Maku.
Maku. I don't know. It's a work in progress. Marvel Cinematic Universe, you're saying?
I am. That's a mouthful.
Woof. Well, give that man an eyebrow. Ding, ding, ding. Yes, you're right. 18.2 billion, which is bananas. Harry Potter that you mentioned actually comes in just under Star Wars in third place and made a mere $9.2 billion to date.
Chicken feed.
Chicken feed. I don't know why they bother, to be honest. So yeah, there you go. Marvel Cinematic Universe at one, then Star Wars at two, Harry Potter at three. Would you like to hazard a guess as to any of the rest of the top 10, or shall I just rumble on through in a kind of, number eight sort of top of the pops, howdy pop, this kind of boy?
That's Lord of the Rings.
Lord of the Rings, you'd be right. That comes in at five with $5.8 billion worth of wonga.
There's going to be something ridiculous in there that's like not...
You've mentioned, in the ridiculous stakes, you've already mocked one of these franchises.
Wait. Fast and Furious?
Hey, there he is. Coming in at number seven with $5.1 billion. It is the Fast and or the Furious.
Because this is the interesting thing. There's a real mix here, isn't there? I haven't seen all the Fast movies, but I know that some are bad, and I know that some are okay. But that's just my opinion.
Well, I've heard that like the last one that featured Paul Walker, God rest his soul, was actually pretty decent, but I don't know if that's just because it was kind of, you know, when people die and everyone wants to be super nice and, you know, that was good. And their art sort of takes on this kind of put on a pedestal, and it's beyond reproach, and it's kind of considered better than it is just because the person died sort of thing.
Yeah, I can see that. But I suppose they are quite entertaining, aren't they, in the sense that a lot of these are action movies. You've not got many sort of sequels to rom-coms and things like that, have you?
Time 2 hasn't
surfaced yet.
Not yet, but we hold our breath. I think the thing is, it's crossover mass appeal, isn't it? Like Fast and the Furious, Transformers, things like that, you know, they can be understood and enjoyed because of their bombastic scale and in some ways sort of simplicity to a huge number of people. And, you know, that makes for sort of, so it's a big box ticker for the movie industry, I suppose, more so than, I don't know, kind of your niche art house fair. You know, it's not, none of these are going to be like winning Sundance or Cannes Film Festival's sort of left-wing prizes.
I'm looking at the list, there's the DC Extended Universe, the DC EU, they've had an extra letter in there.
Has that not got like a snappy sort of thing that you can call it after the Maku? The Dissue?
Dissue? Bonjour, monsieur. So I had to go an extra letter, didn't they, just to try and top Marvel. But they're quite low down off the back of this.
I mean, you say low down, but they're scraping in at 5 billion at number 9 on the list. I mean, they've barely made a handful of decent movies, but they've still made buck, man, big bucks. They're banking serious sums.
There's something in the comic book movie, isn't there? There's the Venn diagram of, which we seem to love, of comic book fans and, you know, the blockbuster movie goer, I suppose, that, you know, there's a definite overlap there.
Yeah, you're not wrong. We do love a Venn diagram on this podcast. Okay, cool. Are you willing to entertain another game?
Oh, keep them coming. It's Christmas.
It is Christmas. It can play along with all the family. Everyone loves a quiz. You know, Zoom quiz isn't dead. It was just on ice. Okay, how do you fancy a stab at the longest running franchises of all time? Now, I'm going to just give you a little helpy hint here. To even make it onto the hot list, the top 10, as it were, you need to have scored pretty much 8 or more movies in your franchise.
That even rules out the Fast series, doesn't it?
I think the Fast is ruled out just about on that one.
Although you do have Jason Statham and The Rock team up, back in the habit, whatever it's called. Hobbs and Shaw, that's it.
Is that like a split off?
Yeah, I suppose it's interesting because if you're saying about franchises, you're also looking at the kind of reboots as well as spin-off movies. It's quite a nebulous thing to try and look at, isn't it? This idea of the sequel.
Well, I'll give you a few to give you a sort of running head start that haven't made my list, which you might be surprised by. You also might be surprised by how many of these films do currently exist. The Alien franchise has 8 films. How that's happened, I don't know. Terminator currently stands at 6. Rocky is somehow up to 8, as is the Muppets. Mission Impossible, I think, is now on 6, and Lord of the Rings, if you count the Hobbit trilogy, is on 6. It's bananas, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. And are we talking about longest running? Is that over the course of time, or are we talking about like the most films?
No, we're talking about the most number of films, not the duration of the film span, although I probably got that as well for you if you went.
Well, but Bond has loads, so Bond's got to be up there.
Yep, James Bond, you would be right. As far as I can work out, it's currently level pegging with the Marvel Universe, or sorry, the MCU, to give it its correct terminology. They are both pegging out at 23 films apiece.
They've soon caught up then, haven't they, Marvel, with Jimbo?
Well, yeah, because Bond's been going since 1962. With a 24th installment, well, it's meant to come out this year, but I think it's delayed till next year now. Whereas Marvel has squeezed out 23 films since 2008. So 12 years. That's nearly 2 films a year.
Yeah, that is insane, actually, given the scale of them. You know, when you think about the gaps between something like the Jurassic Park series, where, you know, you're talking massive special effects laden films, but the gaps between their franchise sequels are quite big, aren't they, really, given how successful they are.
But then is that down to technology? Because, you know, a lot of Jurassic Park was, although it did embrace technology and use computers to some extent, a lot of it was robotics and prosthetics and live action, and it's just far more labor intensive and costly to do that stuff and, you know, to turn it around. Whereas a load of green screen, it's probably a lot sort of more straightforward.
Yeah, yeah. I think it was noticed that there's a quote from Spielberg, isn't it, who was obviously heavily involved with those films. He said that mega budget movies would eventually crash, causing an implosion.
Yeah, no, he's sort of predicted in 2013 that all of these massive budget sort of blockbuster franchise movies would just implode, I think, from a perceived lack of interest from the moviegoer, in that they just get sick of it and sort of want something a bit more, I don't know, bespoke, genuine, original. And it does feel a lot like there's not a lot of originality floating around Hollywood with what feels like endless reboots and sequels and franchises. And I don't know if they just run out of ideas, or just all of the movie studios realize that the real money is just sort of on creating and milking a franchise rather than coming up with new ideas and giving sort of a platform to new emerging writers, and also trying to feature more original voices, you know, voices that you don't see on screen, more like more black voices or trans voices or LGBTQ plus voices, rather than kind of your typical sort of white male or white female lead, heteronormative.
There's that debate with Bond, isn't there? And interestingly, there's a female 007 in the new Bond, which is ironically No Time to Die, which has taken ages to come out for obvious reasons. But there is that debate, you know, the idea that several black actors have been put forward, haven't they, as who could play Bond.
I think Idris Elba is one that's often been name-checked as a potential.
Well, there's a theory I like about the idea of James Bond is actually just a code name, hence why there's all these different actors. So he's not actually one continuous character. He's a pseudonym that would operate. So I guess if you were wanting to break out and do that again, you probably could, couldn't you?
Yeah, that'd be kind of a nice sort of vehicle to sort of explain that. But anyway, we've disappeared down one of our tangents, and for once I'm going to play lighthouse keeper and row us back into shore. I was trying to pin you down on the longest franchises, Mr. Jim Carlberg. Bond and Marvel Universe have been used up. Do you want to have a swing at any of the bigger hitters?
So it's not that. That's not the longest. Nah,
they're not the longest. Those are joint third.
Third? So
bronze medal. Bronze medal, mate. There's two franchises which have gone on longer. Do you want any sort of clues? Or do you want to sort of try and slug it out?
Well, I think there's going to be a big difference between over time. If you're talking over time, then Bond is up there, isn't it, in terms of that sort of thing. Number, we've got that interesting dichotomy with the number of films and how long they go on for. It's going to be something really left field, isn't it, that I've not thought about that's going to be a cult following or something.
I think one of them, yeah, most certainly. I think both of them in a way are kind of cult, maybe even niche, but you've definitely heard of both of these. I think one will surprise you, and then the other one, you're probably like, oh, of course.
Is it like, are we talking horror? Something like...
One of them is horror, and I think it was a horror franchise that massively influenced one of our featured podcasts.
Oh, well, we haven't done any horror movies, have we?
I mean... Maybe not horror, but kind of monstery.
Oh, let's reverse engineer this. So that's Pacific Rim.
Well done.
Big old monster.
Big old monster.
Hey, Godzilla.
There you are, sir. There you are. Yes, Godzilla. Silver medal position on the second on the podium. 30 films since 1953. With the last one, I don't know, I think they're still making them, actually.
That's a lot of rebuilding Tokyo.
I mean, maybe he goes on tour. I mean...
I'm going to flap Kyoto next.
look out, Fukushima. Oh, no, sorry. No, been done.
Too soon.
Yeah, it's too soon. I apologize. That was in bad taste. Other Japanese cities are available.
Yeah. Does that include the foray into the Roland Emmerich? Does that count as part of that? I suppose it does, doesn't it?
By that, do you mean the one with Jean Reno?
Yeah.
I think so. I guess it's under the umbrella of Godzilla. As awful as that film is, and as much as I've tried to delete it from my mind. Okay, well, let me give you a helping hand with top of the podium, the gold medal position. It's a British franchise. It's not really my cup of tea. It's, if I was to describe it in one word, I'd say kitsch. And if I was to characterize it with a sound, it would be,
it's got to be Nightmare on Elm Street.
Yes, a classic slasher horror.
Are we thinking innuendo?
In your endo?
Are we thinking the late, great Barbara Windsor, R.I.P.?
God rest her soul, possibly the Vic pub's greatest landlady.
So what's
get
that?
Out of my pub!
Was that a Kenneth Williams impersonation?
It's probably the best impersonation I'm going to be able to give.
Yeah, I think I'm there. It's the British institution that is the Carry On films, which...
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah, 31 movies, 1958 to 1992. So in 35 years, basically, they made pretty much almost a film a year. Not as good as Marvel, granted, but, you know, back then things were a bit different. No green screen, couldn't animate Barbara Windsor's ample bosom.
They did had interesting naming conventions, didn't they? There was Carry On Doctor or Carry On.
Yeah, I mean, it was very heavily branded, wasn't it? It's very sort of simplistic, very obvious as to what's the next in the canon. Have you ever seen a Carry On film?
I actually, yes. I mean, my granddad used to have them on all the time. when we went down. It was either cowboy films or Carry On films.
Does that reveal a lot about that person's personality?
He barely spoke, my granddad. So the idea of him enjoying innuendo just seems a bit sort of counterintuitive. But yeah, you never know. Hidden depths.
Hidden. Well, Stillwaters, my man. Stillwaters.
Wait, Carry On COVID.
Yeah, I don't know if we need any more Carry On films. I'm quite glad. I mean, I've never seen one in its entirety, so it's probably remiss of me to sort of sneer at them for what they are, which is, for anyone who's not British and not has not had the dubious pleasure of embracing the Carry On fraternity, they're a series of British movies which generally, I guess, they were kind of like light comedy, and they sort of featured a lot of household British name actors kind of just doing daft things in the name of comedy. I don't know if a lot of that humour is dated particularly well. It's quite slapstick. To modern audiences, quite sort of obvious and quite crass.
Well, I imagine it was pretty dated by the... If it's the 90s, wow, that is... they must have been ancient. People by then.
Yeah, I'm sure Barbara Windsor was still getting her rack out as well. Yeah, there you go. Something we can, you know, dust off our union flags and wave with a sort of sense of pride, maybe? I don't know. Possibly not. Cool. So shall we quickly have a little trawl at some potential future movie sequels that are in the pipeline? Some things to whet your appetite.
Yeah, because what is the future? Though? We've already heard the criticisms for them. You know, well, let's have a look at the list that you've put together. So we've got another interesting naming convention. The Batman movies seem to be an ongoing thing, don't they? They seem to be ever popular.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got the Batman.
The Batman. Yeah. Fast and Furious 9, 10, and 11 have all been planned and are in various stages of production. I know you're excited about those. Topical, Fantastic Beasts 3, 4, and 5, now featuring no Johnny Depp.
Yeah, Mads Mikkelsen seems to be the go-to for that, which I think is a great replacement casting, by the way.
He was the chap who was in Star Wars Rogue One, wasn't he? He played the father.
Yeah.
Does the Carlsberg adverts as well.
And Hannibal.
Yeah, he's class. I'm a big fan. More Halloween films. Halloween are currently on 10 films. And Halloween Kills and Halloween Ends, which are great titles, I think you'll agree, apparently are going to finish the series off, and Jamie Lee Curtis has agreed to be in them.
Okay. So yeah, there's kind of horror reboots. I don't know whether they're reboots or sequels at this point, but I suppose when you're just going around knifing people, it's not that nuanced really, is it?
it's less original. Another Rocky film, Rocky 7, is also planned. Saw 9.
So is that Creed or a Rocky?
No, I think it's an actual Rocky. I think Stallone is going to creak his way down to the ring, and I don't know. I don't know how it works at this point.
It's going to end up being like the football episode of Father Ted. It's going to pan out.
Maybe it's going to CGI it. Maybe they're going to use that like weird anti-aging technology that they used in The Irishman.
Oh, God, no. Yeah, I could do that. Not in a boxing film.
Saw 9. Don't know how they got to 9. Someone's funding these movies. Not sure who. Mad Max 5, that'll be a good one to look out for, I feel. Another Lethal Weapon, hopefully featuring a Rigsy mullet. Indiana Jones 5, Harrison Ford recently came out and said that he was going to be part of it. I think he's pushing 80 now.
He came out and said he's going to be part of it. That's
he didn't come out, as in like he didn't come out of the closet, as it were, in terms of his sexuality. He was interviewed and said, I'm just being clear here. I don't want us to, you know, anyone to be in any, I don't, you know, I'm sure he's very happy with Calista Flockhart.
Okay. Yeah. You dodged my facetious joke there.
Yeah, I've always got one eye on the lawsuits that might be heading our way.
Love to grumpy old Harrison as well. You know, he's I love him. He's good. Just a grumpy granddad. His best part's in Bruno, where he just tells him to fuck off.
Oh my God. Yeah, that is fantastic.
So the man can do no wrong.
Cool. And here's a little one to end on. A little bit of putting a cat amongst the pigeons. Films that were potentially better than their originals. So obviously you get sequels and you get that rarest of rarest things where the film that came after the original actually in many eyes was artistically had more merit than the original. And some films are, you know, the well, ones that are further down the line in the sequence of the film lineage are the ones that are most celebrated. God, that was a long-winded way of saying Terminator 2 is better than Terminator 1, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, that's... I do wonder how much of that is because of the kind of the Hollywood budget that was thrown at that. Because if you kind of... If you redid Terminator 1 with kind of... It's a very 80s film, that, isn't it? You know, from the soundtrack to the kind of the fashions. I mean, I absolutely love that techno-noir scene with the Uzi. And yeah, there's all those 80s dancing, and Arnie just rocks up in his kind of 80s leathers.
Yeah, he's kind of in sort of like bondage leathers. I mean, they're both fantastic films. It's just, it's, I think the first one is put in the shade by how much further they moved forward with the second one. But I mean, other examples, it's not just Terminator 2. Arguably, the internet, or many voices of the internet, feel that The Dark Knight was better than the other films in the Batman Michael Bay series. Michael Bay? What am I on about?
Michael Bay?
Imagine that. Imagine that. I've got Michael Bay on the brain because we were talking about it before we started recording.
The Dark of the Night.
The Dark of the Night. Vomit-inducing special effects. Empire Strikes Back. See, I always thought that was better than the other two films. That was my opinion. That was the one I watched the most of.
I think it's partly because of the sort of set pieces in that. There's a lot of, you've got the Hoth battle, you've got the, you know, the, it is the whole, I suppose in terms of the originality of the thing as well, I mean, it's that idea of you didn't really have that kind of big bad villainous relationship where, you know, there was the kind of the father reveal, which,
you know, spoiler alert, Jim.
Yeah. Well, sorry guys. Sorry if you've been in a coma for
since 1980.
And yeah, just, I mean, the Dark Knight's they're interesting ones because each of these, the Dark Knight and Batman Begins, which is the kind of, it's the reboot, isn't it? And it's a sequel to the reboot, which is quite a confusing concept, but they're two very different films. Tonally, they're quite similar, but, I think the focus in the Dark Knight is very much Batman, whereas the focus is the nature of the Joker and the villain in the second one really takes kind of center stage, whereas, Christian Bale's more of like a supporting actor, really, in The Dark Knight. So, I think it's where the ones that seem to succeed are the ones that have a shift, a significant shift of focus, or a significant shift of some kind of aspect of their structure or makeup.
Yeah, I think as well, because, you know, you could argue the same with Lord of the Rings: The Two Towers. I think in those films, particularly, like, you know, films with huge scale and scope, the first movie is doing a lot of kind of setting out the stall and explaining who the characters are and what the situation is. And quite often, especially if you have like quite a giddy, fanatical fan base, the second installment, they know what's going on and they just want more. And it's just, they're quite often, the middle movies in a trilogy are kind of quite rip-roaring and could just go with it. And they don't have kind of the baggage that like maybe Return of the Jedi or Return of the King, films with the word return in. They've got to tie up the loose ends. They've got
the Mac.
Return of the Mac.
Once again.
Yeah, they don't have that baggage. They're free to be just a rip-roaring sort of movie that's kind of just pure fun without any of the sort of baggage that comes with other movies, whether they're the intro or the outro.
Yeah, so, yeah, I guess there's some credit, isn't there, been bought where they can kind of say, right, now you've got license to be a bit more expressive, perhaps, if it's been... But then and equally, you get ones that just kind of tread there. I would argue that the second Jurassic Park movie was... It had some really great moments in it, like the sort of cliff scene with the, you know, Julianne Moore spread across the breaking glass over the edge of like a massive precipice as being pushed over top by two T-Rexes. So there's some good moments in that, but it doesn't quite hit the heights of the first one, you know. And then you've got some other great examples like Aliens, which does a complete kind of tonal shift, really. It's really quite brazen action movie where the focus of is still the character of Ripley, but she's juxtaposed against these Marines, in that example where she's this sort of fish out of water situation where she's very much just in a comfort zone on a, on a mining ship in the first one before she's sort of forced into this really horrific situation towards pretty much the end of the movie, really.
Yeah. No, I mean, both amazing films. But you're right. There's different directors, very tonally different movies. I mean, almost different genres, really, which we were talking about before we started recording. You know, the first one's kind of like a space horror and the second one's like a space action film. So although there's kind of similarities in sort of themes and characters, they are still kind of quite separate movies.
Yeah, interesting. I mean, what is the answer then, Chris, really? Like, what is the formula? Because, I mean, we talked about the Die Hard script, which links to the next podcast that we're going to do. Oh, you didn't allude to that yet, have you, really?
I haven't alluded to that, no. I was wondering whether we were going to touch on that. We could do it as like just sort of like a cheeky sort of, like I said to you before we started recording this, we could do just a kind of an idea for a future Bolt and just sort of talk about this, but sort of have it as a lead, sort of like a juicy dangler, if you will. Sizzle, whatever you call it, I don't know.
All right, you want to unearth a dangler for us then?
I can unearth a dangler for us and we'll go out on that. All right?
Yep.
Sorry. I'm a bit sniffly at the moment. Right. Yeah, it actually got me thinking. When I was doing the research for this, one thing that sort of cropped up, which I think would be a really good idea for a future Bolt that we could do, was this idea that so scripts in Hollywood, there's often a lot of scripts floating around, a lot of unwanted scripts, and because of the success of Die Hard, they very quickly rushed out Die Hard 2, which tanked comparatively. It's not as good a film, but they were still doing well enough that they wanted to do a third one, and Bruce Willis loved the character of John McClane. He's later said that it's a favourite character he's ever portrayed. Before he hated films, yeah. And apparently one of the scripts that was put in front of Bruce Willis was the idea of there was terrorists on a cruise liner. He thought that was too similar to Under Siege with Steven Seagal, which I think could also be an amazing film for our podcast to pick apart. You know, stripper in a birthday cake. What more do you want? he turned that script down, and then that script basically became Speed 2 Cruise Control, which Keanu had the sense to jump ship from before it sailed from harbor, but Sandra Bullock was unfortunately piloting that sinking vehicle. And was there another one as well? Speed 2 Cruise Press. Yeah, and I think, oh no, that's right, yeah. So the script that was Die Hard 3, which became Die Hard 3, was originally meant to star Brandon Lee and was meant to be a Lethal Weapon sequel, but was rewritten and became Die Hard 3. So it's just all of these like funny little stories about how like scripts do the rounds in Hollywood and end up sort of getting chopped, shopped, and basically morphed into and shoehorned into other things. And I think you felt one of the Transformers movies might have suffered that fate.
Yeah, the last one for definite just seemed like it was, you could take the Transformers out of them entirely and it still tells a somewhat coherent story, believe it or not. And then I think putting the Transformers in actually kind of fuzzies it quite a bit. But it seems to me there's been some sort of like medieval adventure film, involving Arthurian legend, which they then stuck Transformers on top of and then thought, oh, we had a normal dragon. Let's turn it into a Transformer dragon at the end because Michael Bay. And yeah, you ended up with the actual absolute skip fire that is the last Transformers film.
Skip fire. Were you trying to like quickly translate dumpster fire into something British in your head?
Yeah.
I mean, it works seamlessly. I mean, I almost wish I hadn't commented on it.
There you go.
Wow. And on that smouldering skip fire, which has been unsafely overloaded and has many accelerants and flammable materials within it. I think we call time on franchise sequels.
The X-Men can go in there as well because they're abysmal by and large.
You're putting them in the smouldering skip.
They're going on the skip, yeah. Along with the Transformers and I'm toying with which fast one to put in.
I mean, I think they come with a set.
Okay. Yeah, so that's it. Franchise sequels, trope stormed. This is what we do. This is the mini version of what we do. It's only half measures. So what we got up next?
Do we give it away? I mean, I'd go so far as to say we've definitely mentioned our next film within. I'm excited about the next one. I mean, I'm very excited. I'm as excited as you were when we did Jurassic Park.
Yeah. So let's just say it's very much a Christmas film. No arguments.
It is the Christmas film.
So we won't be debating that in our next podcast, but we will be trope storming the Christmas film.
The Christmas film, the one we all look forward to. As ever, you can get in touch with the podcast. We'd love to hear from you. We are on the social medias at Trope Stormers, and if you'd like to write to us, it is tropestormers@gmail.com. Right or wrong, we'd love to hear from you.
And that leaves us just enough time to say, as we always say here on Trope Stormers.
And if I was to characterize it with a sound, it would be, oh!
Bye-bye for now.
Bye for now.
Merry Christmas.
You filthy animal.